Welcome to the Mushrooms Apprentice. For today's episode, I have invited my dear friends and publishers, Steve and Chris Krimi of Logo Sophia Books, to talk about what has been driving the ubiquitous social engineering that has been shaping minds and implanting opinions and is creating reality for us and has been doing so for well over 100 years now. But few people have any idea that this is happening, much less how it's happening. So if we really want to see things change for the better in this world, we need to understand how we got here in the first place. Otherwise, we're grasping at straws. And as the psychedelic arena is rife with social engineering, we will also be discussing that in this episode as well. And so for those who are unfamiliar, we are going to talk about Tavistock today. And I'm going to start by reading you a couple of paragraphs from a couple of different books on the subject, and I will put links to those books in the description. And then I'm going to bring on Steve and Chris Krimi, and they have a vast knowledge on this subject. So I think you're going to find this episode very illuminating, but also a very important one to listen to. So this first paragraph is from Daniel Estulin's book, Tavistock Institute, Social Engineering for the Masses. And he writes, Tavistock Institute for Human Relations is the psychological warfare arm of the British royal family, located in a suburb of London. It is the world's most important institute for manipulation of population. According to the official history of the Tavistock Clinic, quote, in 1920, under its founder, Dr. Hugh Creighton Miller's leadership, the clinic made a significant contribution to the understanding of the traumatic effects of shell shock. End quote. In the 1930s, the Tavistock Institute developed a symbiotic relationship with the Frankfurt Institute for Social Research. Their collaboration led them to analyze the culture of a population from a neo-Freudian standpoint. End quote. And from John Coleman's book, The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, Shaping the Moral, Spiritual, Cultural, Political and Economic Decline of the United States of America, quote, the Tavistock Institute for Human Relations has had a profound effect on the moral, spiritual, cultural, political, and economic policies of the United States of America and Great Britain. It has been in the front line of the attack on the U.S. Constitution and state constitutions. No group did more to propagandize the U.S. to participate in World War II at a time when the majority of the American public were opposed to it. Much the same tactics were used by the social science scientists at Tavistock to get the United States into World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Serbia, and both wars against Iraq. Tavistock began as a propaganda creating and disseminating organization at Wellington House in London in the run-up to World War I. What Toynbee called, quote, that black hole of disinformation. On another occasion, Toynbee called Wellington House, quote, a lie factory. From a somewhat crude beginning, Wellington House evolved into the Tavistock Institute and went on to shape the destiny of Germany, Russia, Britain, and the United States in a highly controversial manner. The people of these nations were unaware that they were being brainwashed. The origin of mind control, inner directional conditioning, and mass brainwashing is explained in an easy-to-understand book written with great authority. The Fall of Dynasties, the Bolshevik Revolution, World War I and World War II saw the destruction of old alliances and boundaries, the convulsions in religion, morals, family life, economic and political conduct, decadence in music and art, can all be traced back to mass indoctrination, mass brainwashing, practiced by the Tavistock Institute social science scientists. Prominent among Tavistock's faculty were Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, It is said that Herr Goebbels, propaganda minister in the German Third Reich, used methodology devised by Bernays, as well as those of Willy Munzenberg, whose extraordinary career is touched upon in this work about the past, present, and future. Without Tavistock, there would have been no World War I and World War II, no Bolshevik Revolution, Korea, Vietnam, Serbia, and Iraq wars. But for Tavistock, the United States would not be rushing down the road to dissolution and collapse, end quote. And so that may make you uncomfortable and sound very depressing, but this is grow up time for all of us, and we have to face the music. And so I am welcoming now my dear friends, Chris and Steve Krimi. Welcome, you guys.
Oh my goodness, Shona, that was a great intro.
Hello, Shona. Yes, yes. Nothing can get us more excited than going down this beautiful pathway filled with flowers and joy for all of us.
Yes, rainbows and unicorns. Well, I think that last paragraph, and that was from John Coleman's book, is really mind-blowing, and people have to wrap their heads around that this is the power of Tavistock and their brainwashing program, that if it weren't for Tavistock, World War I and World War II and these other wars would not have happened, because the European people didn't want to get involved in these wars. And so what did they have to do? They had to somehow convince them, coerce them into agreeing. And there was something I read in Daniel Estulin's book. According to Tavistock, they said, something about an idea is far more powerful than a standing army.
Yes,
that makes you just sense. Have to get that idea into people's heads,
because so, that carries itself. That carries the whole population.
Yes, and you can't get an idea into the masses unless you can influence the media. Right. You know, you have to have friends in high places to really get it out there.
Yeah.
Right. So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just like what you were saying earlier about it being likened to a fungal infection. I think the word cancer is so overused at this point. Oh, it's cancerous. It's cancerous. Okay. Yes. Well, we've all been so numbed by experiencing loved ones dying from cancer. Yes, we understand that. But these terms get wear out. They get overused, and so they lose their potency. So now we have to shift a little bit and say, okay, what else do we find that really is deteriorating in an insidious way in our lives? And that's true. Fungus is perfect.
Fungus is good. Virus can't use anymore.
Can't use virus anymore,
unfortunately. Used to be a good one.
Yeah, I said this is like, it's like black mold is what it is.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, or black.
Well, and that maps on to the black nobility.
And the black goo.
And the black goo.
But we probably won't get to the goo. might get to the woo, but not the goo.
But you might want to check out Alexandra Bruce's latest articles on the black nobility. She's at Forbidden TV, is it now? Forbidden
TV? Yeah, that's her Substack.
Forbidden TV. But she just did a whole thing on the black nobility.
Okay, on Substack.
Okay. So I think that was a really good introduction. And I think I'd like to add, he said, it was said that it was the British monarchy that founded it initially in World War I, but it was actually British monarchy, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the... whatchamacallit, the Rothschilds. All right, so you've got the banking, and you know that whole structure is put in. And at that time, you know, before World War I, there were a number of things going on, but that the control systems were being put in place, right? And this is one of them. So then the media control system, then you have the what was called the Pilgrim Society, which was the combination of the press with the espionage, with the MI6 and MI5 and the what was for us, I don't know when the OSS started, but the pre-CIA. So it was getting all, so we have to understand, first of all, when we say Tavistock is a one way to talk about all of these things, right? So Tavistock is the the cultural propaganda aspect of it that eventually turns into also into the into a sexual transformation clinic, you know, which is actually part of it. So they got involved directly, but for the most part, they started as an, as the propaganda. The Frankfurt School, which comes out of the Bolshevik Revolution and the failed revolutions in the West, because people were all right with capitalism, all right? And so they form it, and so they decide, well, we can't beat, you know, the Western capitalism. So what we have to do is undermine it at every aspect. Mm-hmm. So that, so which is also part of the Tavistock agenda. So it's the agenda of the Frankfurt School of Social Research. And then they kind of form in Germany, Hitler rises, then they all get invited, how nice, to Columbia University. And what they did was infect the whole educational system with what's called critical theory. All right. And critical theory is the theory that, and it's based on what's called cultural Marxism. So Marxism, as the, for rising of the masses for revolution, did not work. Right. So then they decided to combine Marxism with Freudianism. And so the psychological end comes in and it becomes what's called cultural Marxism. So what are they doing? So they're getting aspects of the culture to fight each other, black versus white, male versus female, gay versus straight, et cetera, et cetera. And you can see this is still going on today with Marxist, with critical race theory is Marxist, but they'll never admit, they'll never say it's Marxist, but it's right out of Marxism 101.
Even the generation gap.
The generation gap, generations against each other. That was, of course, one of the hallmarks of the Vietnam War. You know, and so that's, so there's three things I see, three prongs, basic prongs. So the Tavistock is the propaganda arm, and that includes that. So that's all the media stuff. All right. Then there's the Frankfurt School, which is all the educational stuff. Right. They're changing education, getting all Marxist professors running everything. And it's gone to the point now where there's nothing but them in there. When I went to college, you know, this guy's a Marxist. You took a class with him. You argued with him and you moved on. You know, it wasn't about indoctrination. Right. Then the third aspect is the intelligent aspect. So that's the CIA, you know, MI6, Mossad, et cetera, the Savak, and you can just go on and on, whatever, the KGB. So they're all those, and those are the ones that put a lot of the things into action or gathered the funding from, you know, drugs and child trafficking, mm-hmm. Et cetera, and put those fundings into someone like, say, Ewan Cameron, who did all of those horrific experiments on people in the name of Tavistock. He was working mostly in the 50s and 60s. He's a Scottish.
McGill?
He was at McGill University.
McGill University in Canada.
Right.
Right.
So that was it. So that's kind of the structure, the big structure. Holy, that was not too much, but you know, it's just basically through these intelligence arm, there's the educational arm, and then there's a propaganda arm, which is Tavistock.
What about the military?
Well, military CIA.
That's CIA.
Really.
What also psychiatric?
Right. Well, they're all, so that's the thing. They're all psychiatric.
Right.
And so really this whole thing is a psychiatric op coming from Freud, who basically his job. And so, you know, the basic split in psychology, psychiatry, whatever you want to call it, is Freud and Jung. And Jung wanted to incorporate archetypes, incorporate Gnosticism, incorporate alchemy. So he wanted to work with the imaginal realms. Now, I may disagree with Jung what those imaginal realms are, but at least he was trying to operate there, right? And Freud, of course, was much more aligned with Marxism, and it's a physicalist kind of thing. So then and then Freud's nephew is the guy who was mentioned in the introduction, Edward Bernays, who maybe he's like the Jabba the Hutt of this whole operation, because he's just like a fat slob who everyone was scared of. Well, at least in the movie we saw of him at the end of his life.
And physically,
he lived almost 100 years or over 100 years. So
with Henry Kissinger.
Right. So we want to start with him because he's responsible for fluoride in the water. He's responsible for women smoking cigarettes. I forget what else. I mean, he's just like it. Everything you turn to, everything you turn to that is crap in our lives and detrimental, you know, comes out of his propaganda machine.
And I'm sure all of Madison Avenue, all the advertising agencies, that's all deception. And as our friend Anna would say, it's the Russian word for that is krivda, deception. Mm-hmm. That's all krivda. It's all deception.
Ultimately, it's manipulating people into doing things that they otherwise would not or would go against their better judgment using a number of techniques. And Bernays, as Freud's son, or rather nephew, read all of Uncle Sigmund's books and worked for the US during World War I doing propaganda.
Right, right.
And then said, you know what works during wartime? Why wouldn't it work during peacetime?
Right. Yeah, and that's, yeah.
Right.
And yeah. And also both Freud and Bernays hated people. They yes. hated people. And Bernays called people stupid dopes.
And yeah, and the other thing he did, he invented conspicuous consumption.
Yes.
In other words, you know, you were, whatever, 100 years ago, you know, you needed a new washing machine, you pulled out the Sears and Roebuck catalog or whatever, you know, you got what you needed. He invented getting things you didn't need.
So he convincing turned, you that you turned us things. Into consumers. So then,
again, a psychological
so the language of consumerism came in through that venue.
Right.
And so I worked in psych hospitals for 30 years in New York. And so I went through all of these different iterations of what you would call a patient. So they were no longer at some point called patients. Now they were clients. Then at another point, they were actually consumers because they were consuming the product of psychiatry. And then there were clients, there were consumers. I can't remember all the others, but and this concept of team approach. So that was also like you would cluster up into these small groups. And the medical staff would all form a team, and there would be a team leader, much like in the communities where Barack Obama was a community leader, right? He was into that. So in the psych hospitals, they had this team approach, and you would have not a lesson plan, but a treatment plan that you would have to write up for each patient. But it was all very mechanical and very highly structured. Highly controlling, and there was a team leader. And
sorry.
Go ahead.
That's that comes out of Tavistock. And that's a direct result of Tavistock, this idea of teams, because then you can control and you kind of get into a groupthink kind of thing.
But I lived through that. I saw that iteration, that whole thing, and it just seemed, well, at the time, I had no idea that it had a dark side, that it was so controlling. But that those hospitals were testing grounds, as we all know today, for so many things, for drugs, for psychedelics. They even had a drug unit. So people who were completely wiped out from LSD and lost their ability to function in life, they had a whole section just for them. And then that whole program, that MKUltra program, was writ large now upon the society. But that was the testing grounds.
Right. And so we should say also that Edward Bernays and Walter Lippmann, I believe, those two were in charge. They were from or connected with Tavistock, highly connected. They were in charge of the United States kind of end of this operation.
Yes. So, and I just want to, and maybe I'll just give a little historical
please
background because it's so this iteration, I mean, it goes back, it goes way back, but it, you know, we'll just talk about the particular iteration starts around World War. So after World War One, what we have is, you know, at the time they were called shell-shocked, right? And so they were, so the Tavistock Institute, it began as the Tavistock Clinic. And so that aspect of it was they were, quote unquote, treating the shell-shocked people, and then they were finding that these people were easily manipulated into thinking certain ways. And this is probably what they were looking for. So this sort of, you know, the early forms of what was later to be called brainwashing. So it begins with these clinics after World War One. And then again, so then it starts to get, well, if we can do that, we can extend this to the general population. And so then the Tavistock began also to be the propaganda machine for, as you said earlier, World War One and then World War Two. How do you get people who don't want to fight a stupid war in a trench in, you know, knee deep in mud, you know, with you know, like a 2% chance of survival, especially because at World War One, the you know, the ballistics and the guns, you know, overcame, you know, the traditional fighting techniques that the generals all learned. You know, they just didn't work for that kind of thing. So I haven't even, you know, tanks and planes flying overhead, you know, they just didn't have that. And so, you know, the death toll was incredible. So, you know, so to get people to get involved in that, they had to manipulate and that manipulate, I guess it's good to bring it up to today, because look at, you know, the whole Gaza thing. Oh, chopped off babies' heads. Oh, no, well, I guess they didn't chop off babies' heads. But every time you hear a call to war, they're always, they're killing the children. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Famous example, the first Iraq war with one of the most lovely people who ever graced our planet, Papa Bush, asked, you know, this woman, young girl, teenager, comes and testifies before Congress telling that the Iraqi army came into Kuwait and pulled the plugs on all the incubators. Again, they're killing the children. Well, it turned out that she was the Kuwaiti's ambassador's daughter or niece, one or the other. I think it was a daughter. And who just comes in and lies before Congress. And then boom, boom, boom. Oh, we got to go, you know, we got to go save the poor Kuwaiti babies. So I think this is a theme that gets played over and over again because it's, you know, the card works.
Well, so yeah, what this is an appeal to emotion. And this always was also a big, big piece of Tavistock.
Always.
Is they had to infantilize people, and they would infantilize them through this appeal to emotions that are keeping them constantly in emotion, which prevents them from accessing their critical thinking. And of course, that's also, that emotion is usually from some kind of trauma, either hearing a horrendous story like that or seeing horrendous pictures. And there's this, just, you're just traumatized, you go emotional immediately, and you're not in your critical thinking mind. And another technique of theirs was, you mentioned, you know, they've got to coerce, they had to coerce Americans and Europeans as well to get into this war that they didn't want to get into. And so in America, they called anyone who voiced objections to it an isolationist. Mm-hmm. And so that word isolationist was a derogatory word. And again, this is, you know, people don't know the logical fallacies, so they can't recognize, they don't understand even how an argument properly works, right? So they get called a name like that, and their first impulse is to deny it or defend themselves or no, but, you know, and so they've just abandoned their argument. I talk about this all the time. So, and we see that has continued, because even during COVID and even before that, okay, conspiracy theorists. So it shuts down all conversation. It shuts down all critical questioning. Oh, you're just a conspiracy theorist.
Anti-vaxxer.
Anti-vaxxer. That was a huge one. And so this is why I think this is so important right now, because this is an election year and we've got this war going on in the Middle East. And I mean, it's propaganda on a level of steroids that is just unimaginable. And more coming, and people are sitting ducks for this because they don't understand.
Have you happened to notice that the three-card Monty of population control is playing the emotion card on people, sex and trauma. The trauma locks it all in.
Yes.
So it's emotional control, it's sexual control in spades.
Yes.
And trauma. And those three things are like a three-card Monty that people don't see because the hand movements are so quick and it's like a shell game. A magician. It's a magician's trick. And look over here while I'm changing everything over here, but you're distracted here, so you don't see how I'm deceiving you, where Krivda comes in again.
Right. And this is the thing too. Most people don't, like, they don't think like that. So it's just, they can't possibly believe that someone, it's like, well, why would someone want to take down the West? Why?
Mm-hmm.
But we're not talking, these people who formed Tavistock, the royal family, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, these are not nice people.
No, they're not honorable in any way. Not even nice. Not nice. There's no honor. But there's also no empathy. So empathy with their, what is it, destruction of care?
Yeah, something like that. Elimination of care.
Elimination of care. There's a phrase that they use. Anyway,
at the thing with
cremation
the owl.
Is the word cremation I'm looking for. Care. Cremation of care during their, it's the place out in California.
The ritual place out in California.
How we all know it. Anyway, cremation of care.
With the owl effigy?
With the owl, yeah, yeah.
Bohemian Grove,
yeah. So they have this.
That's their big ritual.
They do the cremation of care. So it is beaten out of them, just traumatized out of them. So there is no care. There's this level of numb. No sensation, no emotion, but then you bring in just the sexual proclivities, which are so sick and twisted, that locks it all into the first chakra. And they're stuck in that first chakra, and they cannot get out of that loop because it's been traumatized into them. And so then whatever actions they take after that are informed by those treatments that they've been subjected to themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's generational.
Right. And so then they went writ large really for the first time. And Chris and I are old enough to remember this, was the Kennedy assassination in 1963. And what that was a huge trauma, Now, 3 weeks later, the Beatles are on the Ed Sullivan Show, right? I mean, you know, so that is like, that is really when, Tavistock says, yeah, I'm here. Yeah. This is what we're doing. And so they control. So the whole idea, here's the trauma of the Kennedy thing and here's replacing it. And that's the, you know, the real initial cultural step of rock and roll, sex, and then infantilism. She was just 17, you know what I mean? It's all in there.
It's like whiplash. It's a cultural whiplash.
Well, also the JFK assassination was a ritual killing of the king.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That's very important to understand. And again, none of this is conspiracy theory for those out there listening. Like,
no, that's played out. That whole term has been,
well, no.
They got a lot of mileage out of that. God bless them. They're really, you've got to hand it to them. They are evil geniuses.
Yes. And so that was a way to change dramatically the face of this country, because again, Tavistock really declared a war on the West, and particularly this country, because of the ideals that this country has stood for. They had to completely eradicate those, sorry to say, but it's true, that these sort of Christian ideals, if you will, and also that long-standing idea, which I think is true, that man was made in the image of God, however you want to think of that, right? And that, you know, we are essentially, you know, we're sacred beings and we're sons and daughters of this creator, and we're here to ourselves create. But according to Tavistock, no, we don't even have a soul. We don't have a soul.
No.
We are, you know, pretty worthless and also dangerous. And that's, of course, thank you, Freud. Very dangerous. Right. Anything can happen. that deep psyche of ours.
Right.
Yeah.
Of his.
Yep. So I just want to iterate the point that so this is when it became a mass movement. So it went from, you know, manipulating individuals, and we can get into Ewan Cameron, who's doing all these experiments on erasing people's minds in the early 60s and 50s in at McGill in Montreal. But he was on the, in fact, that's even known that he was on the CIA payroll, because he went to establish something like that in Australia. And there's like, you know, there's a signed check somewhere that somebody found, not a signed check, but a receipt for his payment from the CIA, like directly, you know? So, I mean, it's known that he was being paid by the CIA. In fact, you know, even though everybody knows that, there is evidence of it also. But the things that he was doing, especially like one of the most heinous things was put people into sensory deprivation and do something that he's called psychic driving. So the psychic driving, the people who survived it said that, you know, they were in a state of, you know, no seeing, hearing, you know, sensory deprivation. And he would have a tape loop playing like 250,000 times, you know, your mother hates you. Literally, that was one of the things he would do. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. And they all, you know, and all these people, they're all sociopaths, psychopaths. And so, but what's different between that? I mean, but it's still going on. I think that's one I point, you know, want to bring out, that, you know, to look around and see what it is. When you see here, for example, Trump gets convicted, and you hear, and then the term convicted felon is used by everybody over and over and over and over again. That's psychic driving. That's the same process in order to brainwash everybody who's just sitting there. So, you know, to go back to your original point, this is what you got to be friggin' aware of, is that everything they're doing is this, right?
Well, I think that would be the perfect takeaway from this conversation, is to be able to have pattern recognition.
Yes.
And to see these larger patterns that are being foisted upon the society, and then to see them played out in our everyday lives. So once you see the larger pattern, you have to have a conscious awareness of a pattern in order to be able to identify it again and again and again, and to see how it's being used to manipulate you. So it's a skill that it's like you have to use these muscles. You have to want to be aware in order to get out of this tape loop.
Exactly. Well, I use that pattern recognition when I'm working with clients. Mm-hmm. They tell me what's going on in their life, and I know that this is symptomatic mm-hmm. of something that happened a long time ago, and they're in a pattern.
And it repeats and repeats.
Yes, and you can't see it until someone helps you, or you're able to see it, something happens and you can finally see the pattern, then you can do something about it. And also, to your point, I was saying, I don't know, I've said this for a while, these past few years, I'm like, could we just have 3-4 months, even 1 month, nothing freaking happens, where we can just live our lives? And only to read, I believe it was Daniel Estulin's book on Tavistock, saying this is what they are doing. They have to create crisis after crisis. It's always something. So what that does is it breaks people down.
Yes.
Mentally, emotionally, spiritually.
That's right.
Right.
Which is why they don't want us to gather together to support one another.
Which goes back to one of the most horrific psychological experiments, which is the experiment of learned helplessness, where they would, I hate to even say it, but they would shock animals over and over and over again, and have them in a place where they can't get away until they just stand there numb, because they can't get out.
Well,
so these are the minds of the people who do all this.
Fauci comes to mind, but the Beagles.
Fauci is of that. Fauci is right out of that tradition.
A monster.
And in fact, the Tavistockian, the people found. But anyway, so just to go back to learned helplessness is again writ large with us. You know, what can I do? Oh, what can I do? You know, just so you're just, everybody's like, it's just enough trouble just to make it to the store and back, you know. Mm-hmm. So they saw themselves The original founders of Tavistock, the psychiatrists of the Wellington House, which is the precursor to Tavistock and to Tavistock, as the sort of the psychological reiteration of what's called the Royal Society. The Royal Society was founded in Britain, and you know, really, it's really astonishing how much power that dinky little island has. That so it was the control system of science. So it was based on they saw their lodestars Francis Bacon, and the guy with the anyway
John D. Big,
no not John,
no,
D.
The, John D.
The,
no.
The guy who's the structure of the universe, Isaac Newton.
Oh.
I'm sorry, brain's not quite what it used never was what it used to be. So anyway, Isaac Newton, of course, you know, who supposedly, well, you know, he was a, you know, he was an astrologer and, you know, an alchemist, but all those, he never showed anybody those writings, only saw those after he died. You know, basically he gave us the billiard ball universe, right? Francis Bacon gives us the concept of experimentation, not being for up until Bacon, experimentation, science was to get science. The word science means knowledge. Right, it means to get scientia. Yeah, so he changes it from getting knowledge to getting knowledge to use something to manipulate. So that comes out of Francis Bacon, who, you know, anyway, a lot of people think highly of Bacon. I don't, but if you read him, this is what he says it right there. You know, he was in his New Atlantis. He's writing about, you know, this priesthood that, you know, people are kissing the ring of, and they, you know, and they're manipulating and they're doing torturing animals to get knowledge for human gain, right? So this starts with Francis Bacon. So we're going, you know, early 1600s. In the early 1700s, they formed the Royal Society. So they look back at these guys so this is the control system of scientists that runs all the way through to the guy in the wheelchair.
Oh, right.
Sorry, I'm doing this over and over again. You know, the big scientist that everybody loves, Big Bang Theory.
Stephen Hawking,
right? So the control system of science runs through the Royal Society. You know, if you just look at them, they're just all the famous scientists were part of the Royal Society. So they saw themselves as the psychiatric version of the Royal Society. And of course, the whole thing of psychiatry is to make itself. Psychiatry, there's nothing real about psychiatry, right? It's all abstract notion, id. You know, what the frig is an id, right? You know, this is crap that Freud made up, right? But if it's become reified, your id is off, you know.
Well, it's become that way because, of course, his nephew, Edward Bernays, who was a diabolical mastermind and just brilliantly gifted at propaganda, made it.
Right. and that's true, especially because Freud was completely out of fashion by then.
Yeah.
He was bankrupt. He was living in London, bankrupt. Nobody gave a crap about him.
And Bernays brought him over to the United States.
Yeah, Bernays revivified him and brought him into the Marxist theory and all that stuff. So it's crazy. It's crazy.
You were talking about the New Atlantis and the
right. So anyway, this is the way they saw themselves. These crazy, psychotic psychiatrists. But then their whole thing is to bring psychiatry into this like actual science where it isn't. There's no test, you know, as John Rappaport is fond of pointing out.
Yeah.
You know, there is no test for schizophrenia. There's nothing you can find in the blood. There's nothing you can find anywhere. You can just take a set of behaviors and they get bigger and bigger and bigger and make them schizophrenia, make them schizophrenic and say you have schizophrenia, you know? And I mean, you know, to a certain extent, you know,
it's all subjective.
You know, yes. But this concept that you're talking about of basically the universe provides you with all over and over again, the thing you need to work on. You know, so apparently our thing is to work on narcissists. And so
us
personally, we seem to be, you know, get a narcissist visit, in, you know, in insert themselves into our lives every once in a while. And we get better and better, I think, at redirecting them to their proper place. But, you know, and I call them a narcissist. And just the fact that I do that, it makes me a product of this movement also, you know, so I'm not immune.
You're using their
language. I'm immune to them using their language. And I'm, you know, imputing a thing to a person, you know, that they quote unquote have, you know. So I'm just saying, you know, I see how I do that.
Yeah.
You know.
And so, anyway. Yeah, that happens with food and nutrition too. I was listening to, I think it was Dr. Phil interviewed Donald Trump just recently, like last week. And I don't know how they get onto the topic of food and nutrition. And so Trump made this very interesting statement, and everybody kind of jokes about the food he eats is like, it's like junk food, right? And he said, you know, I don't think about it. They tell you can't eat this and you can't eat that, and that's going to give you cancer, and this is no good for you, and that's bad for you. He says, hey, I don't listen to them. I just eat what I want. And there's a lot to it. I mean, the list of do's and don'ts nutritionally these days, it makes your head spin. And where is it all coming from? And everything gives you cancer, and you can't eat that, and this is no good, and that's no good.
Oh, yeah.
So foods that people have been eating for thousands of years.
I was about to say, the majority of those, or a number of those foods, are foods that we've always eaten, like the raw milk, the raw dairy.
Right. And we understand that they've been compromised by the big pharma and what have you. But regardless, still, these, you know, wheat is like the staff of life. It supported life for thousands of years.
Well, back to Tavistock, right? Vegetarianism is an actual Tavistock program.
Right.
You know, the promotion of vegetarianism.
And
you know, now in sectarianism. But
women's liberation.
Yeah, yeah. So that all comes out of Tavistock, and you know, Tavistock really comes, you know, the 60s, you know, between the music and the drugs and all that. But yeah, so it's actually
a little background before the 60s, because the 50s was when there was all this experimentation with LSD, which came from Sandoz Laboratories, which I believe is in Switzerland. You know, I'll tell you something. Swiss.
Yep.
I don't believe that bullshit story about Hoffman.
Hoffman.
About how he accidentally discovered it and he got on his bike and he biked midway through, he realized he was tripping balls and everyone celebrates the day. I'm telling you, to me, that just sounds like standard Tavistockian propagandist bullshit. And I just don't believe it because it's so damn dark. And then Sandoz was sending LSD to all these different psychiatrists, including someone named Dr. Loretta Bender. And I just have to share this story. I've shared it years ago. The one and only time I attended a MAPS conference, which was probably 10 years ago, you know, I'd been working with the mushroom for a couple of years, and all of this was new to me.
Help us say what MAP is. MAPS, you should probably say what
MAPS is. Thank you. MAPS is the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. And so they'll have like over 100 researchers from all over the world come to a specific place and discuss their research with psychedelics. And so there was a psychiatrist from New York there talking about kind of the history of psychiatry and psychedelics. And he was probably late 30s, early 40s, I would guess. And I don't remember his name. Otherwise, I would say it. I wish I did. But in any case, it was all those years ago. And by then, I had done, because I just naturally, I love to research. And I had done all this research on psychedelics. And I discovered Dr. Loretta Bender, who's like the spawn of the demon, the high demon. This woman was unbelievable what she did. And so this, and I'll tell you in a sec, but this man was first talking about all these different men in psychiatry. And then he said, almost condescendingly, well, it just wouldn't be fair if I didn't include the women. And so then he has this slide with all these faces of all these women in the psychiatric, and also the psychedelic field. And he talks glowingly about Dr. Loretta Bender. Okay, so Dr. Loretta Bender was active in the 50s. She was funded by a CIA-fronted organization, and she was working with children as young as 5 up to about 12 or 13. Most of these children were orphaned.
Always, yeah.
And she was doing experiments on them with both LSD and electroshock therapy. Oh, and a number of these poor wee souls were autistic. Some of them were thought to be schizophrenic. And not one person,
before
not
or after.
One person ever said anything about her practices. And, you know, electroshock therapy is just brutal is an understatement. And then when she died, she was given a full page obit in the Journal of Psychiatric Medicine.
Of like, course she was.
Are you kidding me? And she was an absolute monster.
Wow.
And so this, and this was, again, all like Tavistockian experimentation on the mind. How can we control it? And of course, experimenting not just on military men, which people know about, but also prisoners in prisons, yeah. And extensive drug testing. And there was another drug that they would use, which was not a psychedelic, but it would put them into seizures. I mean, it was absolutely despicable. And this is something that still goes on. And actually, of course, that drug was, of course, used on these children as well. So all that to say that, you know, prior to the 60s, you know, they were looking at LSD as a way to change minds, you know, corrupt or manipulate the mind. And it was done on mostly unsuspecting people. And then that whole 60s time of rebellion, of course, happened after we lost our king, our Camelot.
Yes.
Camelot was extinguished before our eyes, which, of course, my God, I can't even imagine, you know, that was a trauma that was deeply emotional and spiritual for people. And it was, I see it also as a way of demoralizing people.
And oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then everything changed, including the styles and the way people would wear clothes, the colors, all the polyester.
Yep. Big one.
Yeah. And so they then saw their opportunity, Tavistock, to go after our youth.
Yeah. It's been full bore, full on assault. My entire life, you know, in November, I'll be 75, you know, so my entire life, there's been this barrage. You didn't even know you were getting it, but coming out of the dream, coming out of the nightmare, thank goodness it was gradual for me. It started when I met Steve Krimi back in 19. 19-
what, the nightmare? Yeah.
That's right. The nightmare started back then, that long ago.
Oh,
but
boy.
We met in what, 84, and my first trip out of the country was, you know, we took a, you know, we, our first date was, you know, a month backpacking in Turkey, and I was like kid in a candy store. I had never been out of the country or be immersed in another culture. Well, you know, Jason Beshears talks about a pattern break. Boy, did I have a pattern break, and it changed my entire life. So you get out of that matrix of the constant barrage of what the standard should be, who you are, what your role is, and you come, you're thrust into this other culture, which is ancient, by the way, and you get a whole different perspective on life, and you get much more ground, you come back a different person.
And isn't it interesting, too, when you do go to those traditional cultures, gosh, the elderly are quite respected, aren't they?
How about that? Yes.
That's quite interesting. And this is something else Daniel Estulin talked about. And I don't think I have the quote in front of me, but there was some famous guy in the 60s who said, never trust anyone over 30.
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah, yeah.
And,
right.
And even the whole flower child thing and the communes and the long hair and the bare feet and all and the sexual ease.
Revolution.
They thought, oh, this is so revolutionary. Yeah. This was Tavistock thought of this back at like the 1920s, I think, or even sooner. And there was his quote actually was invented back then, where they said something, someone said something like, you know, don't trust anyone. There's something like, I have nothing to say to anyone over 30, something like this.
But there was also the no trust.
Right. Yeah. But then the lines from two of the songs. So the Rolling Stones wrote, and what a drag it is getting old. And the Who wrote, hope I die before I get old, you know, and now they're pretty freaking old, but that's besides the point. Yes. And in fact, go ahead. You want to say something?
Oh, well, I was just going to say, now they call us boomers. And I remember a couple of years ago.
What does that mean?
Hearing that expression, I know, what the fuck is a boomer? Like, what's going on?
I think it comes from the baby boom.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
The baby boom post-World War II, which was.
Still.
Right, but it's a derogatory term.
Yes, it is.
Now. It is now.
Yeah.
But to your point, so we publish the complete works of an author named Fitzhugh Ludlow, right? And he died in 1870. And there, at that time, it was just before the trauma of the Civil War, he's writing things. And there was a lot of that promiscuity, three ways. It's part of that in his biography that we publish also. A Pioneer of Inner Space is the name of the book. Anyway, they get into that was going on back then. So that's, you know, 1850s, 1860s, just prior to the Civil War, this whole thing of promiscuity, three ways, loose marriages, things like that. So yeah, so there are cycles of that going on.
But I'd like to go back to the don't trust anyone over 30.
And that's Tavis Stockton.
But I have a new perspective on that after reading Kathy O'Brien's book, Transformation of America, and Elisa Wick's
book. Let's quickly say who Kathy O'Brien was.
Kathy O'Brien was, she's like the poster child for...
She's not gone.
Yeah, she still is, but she was the first one that really broke into common awareness about child trafficking and ritual sexual abuse and using the children and then bringing them up into adulthood and using them to in the MK Ultra program. So they would split the personality through trauma. So it's trauma-based mind control. And MK Ultra is mind control ultra, the K being like the German iteration of control. So ultra control, mind control ultra. And so she was like the poster child, but she was actually, she grew up in Michigan, and her father was, I guess, like very low level interested in local politics or whatever. And he actually ended up selling her to the CIA through Gerald Ford, who was the governor at the time.
He was making pornographic films of his children, and he got caught, and they said, well, you know, we can either jail you or you can give us your daughter. That's basically it.
So they used her and did this whole trauma mind control thing. And they actually used her when they split the mind. You'd think of a mirror that's shattered. Each one is a reflection independent of the other. So
yeah, it's like multiple personality.
Yes, like multiple personality. And one segment or cell does not know what the other one is aware of. And they would use her as what is called a mule, which would be to transfer information. So they would give her top secret information, put her on a plane, send her to the president of Mexico. And there would be a sexual interaction and what have you. But then she would be able to just regurgitate this information verbatim. It could be like an entire document and never remember any time outside that. There would be a clue, a signal, trigger word or a sound or whatever that would bring all of this information out, would unlock that particular cell. So that was, and it goes on and on and on and on. But what I wanted to say about the don't trust anyone over 30, I think it refers to this program, because once they get to be about around the age 27 to 30, the programming begins to pixelate and break down. Mm-hmm. And they start to have memories come back. So like the book that we published last year, 2 years ago, with Jean Hartigan Wainer, Walking with Alethea, she had a similar thing. She was abused as a child by the priest in the Catholic school. But as an adult, in her late 20s, she started to have these memories coming back, which she had zero recollection of before that. So what happens in these programs is that they will murder the person, and they do a snuff film where they murder the person on film, and then they make money on that in their sick way. But Kathy O'Brien was about to be, she and her little daughter, who they had taken as well, they were about to be murdered when Mark Phillips came and rescued them and helped her with her recovery. And then she went public at a certain point. She wrote her book, and now she's a quite well-known person in that field. But don't trust anyone over 30, I think, refers to the program not trusting their victims. Once they hit 30, they have to get rid of them.
Right. There's also the Saturn return.
But I think then that also made its way into the common parlance because they have a sick sense of humor. So they think it's very funny for, you know, to implant that language into the vernacular. You've got, look at the dopes, you know, look at the monkeys. They repeat anything we tell them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, definitely. I think it's on multiple levels.
Right.
And, you know, they need the elderly out of the way. Because
that's where the memory bank.
Right. They have a reference point exactly for how things used to be. And they are witnessing, you know, tremendous decline. And it used to be, of course, that the children were put with the elderly. The elderly would teach the children and, you know, guide them. And so I don't see that at all anymore. The elderly are put in institutions, centers, whatever.
They make it impossible for the families to care for the elderly because they've imposed Alzheimer's onto us. And so how can a family struggling to even pay their monthly bills care for someone who's severely impaired?
Well, that's another good point you make. And the fact is, again, our reality has been created for us by these people who are controlling the economy and business and education and religion as well. And so we're raised in this. And also we haven't mentioned television.
Oh, Lord.
And that is a mind control tool. And what you were discussing around the MK Ultra, which yes, I know it's dark and no one wants to think about it, but that gives you a very mild overview of the sophistication of these techniques that were developed over the 20th century. And also what people don't realize is these so-called Nazis that we were supposedly fighting in World War II, their best and brightest were brought over to this country through something called Project Paperclip and put into the institutions of higher learning and medicine and, of course, psychiatry.
And they even had the arrogance to give it a project name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How arrogant. Yeah,
I was just going to bring up Paperclip.
Please.
It's really important. Well, it's really important to understand that. So this, again, we're talking about this pivotal year, 1946, 1947, you know, and we were, you know, bring it up. This is a year that so much happens right after World War II was over. And one of the things is this bringing over and picking who you want to send to Nuremberg and then who you're gonna change from Wissenstockenstein to Weiss, you know, change their name. And, you know, and then, of course, you have the famous one, is Wernher von Braun, who heads up the rocketry side of NASA. But what no one remembers, and I don't remember his name now, of course, but the guy who Wernher von Braun headed up rocketry, it was a hollowed out mountain in Germany and run completely by slave labor. And you also have to remember that all the companies were run by slave labor in Germany during World War II. And they were building, you know, the V2 rockets, which were the first really, you know, intercontinental sort of ballistics, where they just, you know, fired them up and they would just land on London. And they were faster than the speed of sound, right? And this is at the core of Thomas Pynchon's masterwork, Gravity's Rainbow. So where you would have the explosion and then the sound of the rocket came. There was a complete fuck up for everybody. So the guy who ran that prison camp mountain, you know, V2 bomb construction thing was the guy who they brought in to head NASA. All right. And apparently everybody was just like deadly scared of this guy. And I'm sure there was a reason for it.
Oh, and that's who you don't remember his name.
Oh, I heard about this.
I don't remember his name, but he ran NASA operation. Yeah. But NASA has nothing to do with space exploration.
No. But I saw a photograph of this man you're talking about, and his name escapes me. But he looks scary. Like he looks.
Oh, really?
You can tell he's mean. Like just awful.
We were listening. Yeah, there was some. Some interview with somebody who was like a wunderkind, you know, who, you know, whatever, he's out in his farm in Kansas and he figures out how to shoot a rocket. And, you know, they bring him into the program at like 16 or something like that. And he was talking about this guy. It's like, he said just that everybody was scared of this guy.
Yes.
You know, he would just show up, you know, and in the big limousine and everything. So, you know, theoretically, the paperclip was to take all of the intelligence aspects of the German intelligence, who were especially concerned with Russia, because already they knew they were going to move into the Cold War, and the intelligence game with Russia is going to, the next one's going to be played. So most of the officers were the Nazis that were involved with that.
This makes sense now. Why?
So they brought them all over. And those are the people. So that's when the OSS, the Operation of Special Services, became the CIA in 1947 under the, what's it called? The National Security Act.
Yeah.
Right. As part of the National Security Act, they gave us the CIA, Department of Defense, Joint Chiefs of Staff, the National Security Council, and it created the Air Force. Right. And I'm reading that, so I just don't think I'm smart enough. But so the CIA is created from the OSS, and it was created and being run and infiltrated with these Nazi intelligence.
Go ahead.
And so the thing is, it's not like, so, you know, everyone say, well, we need to reform the CIA. We need to reform the FBI. Well, no, because it didn't start out as something good and then got corrupted. You know, it was corrupt from the start. It was designed to do what it's doing. And then, you know, and then Hoover and the FBI. So these are the enforcement arms, you know, of the whole Tavistock thing, in case anybody, you know, wants to think for themselves about anything.
So I just had a thought. Sometimes I like these conversations because it helps you to see like a pathway opens up.
Yes.
Oh, now I understand why in America do we always berate Russia? Russia was our ally in World War II. How did the transition take place? Why did Russia become the enemy? Well, I think if you import all of your intelligence agencies from Nazi Germany, who were mortal enemies of Russia during World War II, then it stands to reason that they are going to infect all of the information that goes into the Mockingbird media, Russia bad. Why do we hate Russia? I have nothing against the Russians. They never did anything to me.
Well, also,
could it be the influence of these people who were imported with Operation
Paperclip? It was a design, definitely. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say no question. And whenever they want a war, they have to create an enemy to get people on board, because especially a lot of these people are sending mostly their sons off to fight this supposed war. And so you know, with the Ukraine, you know, they needed a bad guy. So it was Putin. And so propaganda, propaganda, propaganda. And before that, of course, think of Iraq and all the stories. I remember reading a huge story in Vanity Fair. This was years ago on Saddam Hussein. And I'm not saying that was a nice man, but like, you know what? Honestly, I don't know. All I know is what we've been told.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just everywhere, everywhere, and repeat, 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 and on the news, everything. And so they have to create a story, a bad enough story that people, again, will get emotional and reactive.
Mm-hmm. And like Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah, and look, well, yeah. And you know, really, in the end, the whole World War II story of communism versus fascism, right? The whole that whole dichotomy is a false dichotomy. It was all created. Fascism, and you know, basically the Russian Revolution was New York bankers, and Hitler was European bankers and a lot of U.S. bankers, also who funded Hitler up until, you know, FDR said, oh, I guess you can't do it anymore. You know, we're declared war. You know, but these guys, the Bush family, most notably Prescott Bush, father of Papa Bush, they are for it. But anyway, so, you know, if you look at it, what's the difference between, you know, the communist state, the socialist state, and the Nazi state? Well, not much. They're operating the same way. They're both fascistic. They're both completely antithetical to any human freedom, and it was just a matter of either you worship Hitler or you worship the state. I mean, you know, or Mussolini, you know, is either a strongman leader. Of course, Russia had their strongman leader, but everything supposedly went to the state, whatever. But it was all corporate, you know, BS. You know, IG Farben and all the Nazi companies.
And now, yeah, we were talking about it at breakfast this morning, and realized, you know, Silicon Valley is running the country.
Yeah. But that's all Tavistock. Again, goes back. It's all Tavistockian propaganda. And that's, you know, we grew up thinking that. And everybody thinks that. World War II, it's the good war. You know, it's the last moral war.
We're the good guys. We saved the day.
You know?
Yeah.
The Russians call it the Patriotic War. That's what they call it, World War II. They call it World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so their name for it is Patriotic War. Because they lost 20 million men.
Yeah, it's horrible.
You know, brutal. I mean, you know, brutal. Forget about it, you know, and they're the reason, you know, that the Brits don't speak German, which is weird because the whole monarchy is German.
Yes, yes, they are. They
That's
are
Hanover.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's German.
So yeah, so you know, so this is it. So this is so yeah. So Tavistock, vehicle of deception, left and right, up and down, front and back. Past and future.
That's right. And so we're going to end the first hour. We have a lot more we're going to cover in the second hour. But, you know, just to summarize here, believe none of what you see, half of what you hear. And I think that's actually isn't that a very old saying?
Sounds like Ben Franklin or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, this propaganda is not new, certainly. It's very, very, very old. And I always recommend reading that book by Charles McKay, written in the 1840s, called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds.
Mm.
A fantastic book. And he goes into the witch burnings and how did they get otherwise reasonable people to turn in innocent victims? And this was not just women, it was men too, and to be burned alive publicly. To the cheers of their neighbors, to people cheering, to people bringing kindling for them to be burned. And then look at during COVID, they would have taken people like yourself and myself and tarred, and there are people who wanted us basically tarred and feathered, dragged into the middle of the street and jabbed against our will. And you know, there were those were otherwise like decent, rational people who changed dramatically. That is the level and just the extraordinary effect of good mind control, good propaganda. So this has long been known, but what Tavistock has done is they have just raised this to a very high art form, if you will. And because it was begun by the royal family and enabled also by the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, is we're talking about the highest levels of power on the planet. So these people have the wealth and the influence to push this everywhere. So it's education. In fact, I think over at least 50 universities in this country are like CIA run. You know, this is, people have got to understand. And don't be depressed. Just freaking get it through your head that this has been going on a long, long time. And it's not our parents' fault. They were raised in this. We also have three or four generations now raised on television. And so there is, we can not fight this. What is the word I'm looking for? Like
resist.
Yes. And that it's like, but you have to recognize what's going on. Turn off your TV. I don't even own a TV. No TV. No. And don't let your children watch it.
Us
and
neither.
Be very, very careful on these iPhones, which are tracking devices and also algorithmic, just full on propaganda mind control devices. So you have to be very, very, very careful with that. Watch out for social media. Most of those people are totally deluded.
Yeah.
Take your children out of school, for God's sake.
Take them out of school.
Get them out of school. That's it.
Yeah.
That's
they go after the youth. They want the youth. And look what they're doing to our children. So there are, and also study, start with natural law. Like, in other words, we have to give ourselves that second education and know how to stand up to tyranny. And also to understand that if you're one of these people who thinks this country is disgusting and it's all colonialism and this and this and this, oh my God, just understand though that has been put into your head. They want, what does communism do? It gets into a country, it infiltrates, and then it turns that country against itself. That's exactly what's happening, in the same way that the young are turned against the older.
It's like an autoimmune disease.
Yes. So there are ways around this. We have far more power than we even realized. And that's not just some trite thought. It's actually the truth. And yes, we are sons and daughters of the Creator. And yes, we have a soul by God. And you know, demoralization is part of their program, because then people won't fight.
That's right.
So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, can I just add?
Please. Yes.
I just want to add, just since it's the end of the show, and just this is a list of what's that?
The end of the first hour.
First hour, yes. But yeah, so there's just a number of organizations, and whenever you hear them, add Tavistock to it, to your head, you know. So these are the main propaganda organizations. We didn't name them yet, all of them anyway.
Oh yeah, let's hear.
And so the older ones, so NATO, Club of Rome, Council of Foreign Relations, the International Monetary Fund, NASA, and then there's all these think tanks, all right? Then there's, and amongst them, and the university places, the Wharton Business School at the University of Pennsylvania, all right? RAND Corporation, the Hudson Institute, big one here, the Stanford Research Institute, okay? And that's where the whole Aquarian conspiracy comes out of it, all that. The Sloan School of MIT, the Heritage Foundation, Esalen, the Brookings Institute, the Institute for Policy Studies. So all these things, a lot of these, and I would add the Institute for Noetic Sciences. These are all Tavistockian control system organizations funded by people you never heard of, and to give you ideas you don't need.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I just thought, so it's good to list them anyway.
Yes, thank you, Steve. And I recommend going on to logosophiabooks.com, and I will have that link to, this is the publishing company that Steve and Chris run, and they have fantastic authors, and I'm very honored to be among them. And they also have a YouTube channel, Good Crack, C-R-A-I-C, which is Excellent. Great conversations there. And Vimeo as well. I'll put all those links down.
Good. Good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. And I will invite anyone who's still listening, who wants to hear more and understand more, to come to themushroomsapprentice.com and subscribe. And we'll give you a lot more of this important information in the second hour.
Thank you, Shona.
Thank you, Shona.